Hey, JB here, the Wolf of Wall Street in the Wolf's Den. Got a great guest today. Famous person, TV personality, has his own show on Netflix, Selling Sunset. You probably know him, Jason Oppenheim. It's interesting because, you know, I really kind of turned the screws to Jason. I'm trying to get his strategy. What's the secret sauce? What's the shortcuts? What does it take to really be a big broker in this town or in any town for that matter in the shortest time possible? And what he says is interesting. Frustrating a bit because it took a while for me to get the truth, but boy, the truth did come out and you're going to want to hear it. This is an awesome podcast. Stay tuned. First, a quick word from our sponsors. Then we're off to the races. All right, so you probably tried meditation before, right? Didn't work. Or maybe you felt you were doing it the wrong way. Something was just off. If mental health is part of your self-care plan for this year, and it should be, then you owe it to yourself to try Headspace. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided, easy-to-use meditations and an even easier-to-use app. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce your stress, improve your sleep, boost your focus, increase your overall sense of well-being, and all of that by translating to what? A happier, healthier, and wealthier life. So you need some help falling asleep? Well, Headspace has wind-down sessions that their members swear by. And for parents, by the way, Headspace has morning meditations that you can do with your kids. Listen, I'm not the meditation type. I'm just not. But I checked out the app before I, you know, agreed to have this endorsement, right, and do it. And I got to tell you, it was easy. I felt great afterwards. And Christina, my fiance, you know, she swears by it. She uses the stuff every night. She's out there doing her meditations, and it's pretty impressive. So I think if you're like me, you know, and you have that high stress level naturally, you're type A, you need to try Headspace. You do. I promise you. You deserve to feel happier. And Headspace is that meditation app, that meditation program made simple. So go to headspace.com/wolfsden. That's headspace.com/wolfsden for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is literally the best deal offered right now. So go to headspace.com/wolfsden. That's headspace.com/wolfsden today. Remember, the first month is free. So what's the worst that can happen? You don't like it, you cancel it, and you'll walk away. But believe me, if you're even half as thrilled with this as virtually every one of their clients is, the only problem you'll have is you didn't try this app out a few months ago because you'd already be feeling better today. If you want to grow your business, you want to diversify your content, this is a product that I 1,000% believe in and use myself every day. And it's been a game changer for me, making more money for me than any other app I've used that's even close to this. It's called Melon. And Melon is a web-based live streaming studio that makes streaming easy and lucrative. It is literally the best out there by a country mile. And I'm looking you in the eye. I'm telling you, that's a fact. Go to live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube in just 5 clicks. All of them at once. You're not going to find a better tool out there than Melon for your live streaming needs. Impossible. Better streaming in HD, recording functionality, real-time audience interaction. You get everything with Melon. So start streaming with Melon today. Go to melonapp.com/wolf. That's Melon, MelonApp, melonapp.com/wolf. Sign up for a free account. Because of me, it's free, by the way. You get a high-performance professional live streaming tool for free. It's blazing fast. The response time is like that. Low CPU usage. It's all available right in your browser. Go to melonapp.com/wolf and start streaming today. This is a no-brainer. If you don't try this, honestly, then you must not like making money online. All right, so Jason, you were voted the number one real estate agent in the country last year, right?
I was.
How did that happen?
You know, I think it's probably a combination of my professional success and then also the reality show. you know, gave me a lot of publicity.
But the show, I'm sure, is a function of your success. You wouldn't have just booked this show on Netflix if you were a lousy broker or didn't have a huge following to start, right? So it's really you created the show because of who you were. So what was it about yourself that made you into this, you know, famous, forget famous because that's the show makes you famous, yeah, but that made you into this like sort of broker, agent of all agents?
Well, you know, I mean, I was an attorney before I was a real estate agent, and I think that really helped. And I think I was able to, you know, bring that legal acumen to my clients. I think it developed a strong trust. So I was quickly building, and I was getting a lot of referral business, and I was getting a lot of a loyal group of clients. And just, you know, I got my own office. I started to brand myself. I started to bring on some agents. And honestly, it was just snowballing. I mean, I was working 15, I still work 15 hour days probably, but you know, just one day at a time. I really started slow. I was very nervous to leave Coldwell Banker. I started in a second bedroom of my house, hired an assistant, and just, you know, slowly grew, didn't get ahead of myself, made sure that I was doing everything on my own. So a lot of agents, when they get successful, they start delegating. They don't answer their cell phone. They've right. got, you know, an office line. They have assistants doing everything. I, to this day, you know, answer. I'm sitting on my cell phone right now, and I'm always answering my phone. I'm communicating with my clients directly. I'm sitting open houses. I'm not pretending like I'm too big time. So I'm always staying engaged.
Got it. So you started at Coldwell Banker the first time you were in real estate?
Yeah.
And as soon as you got into it, was it like just an immediate
no.
rocket up
no,
or
no,
was
no.
it struggles in the beginning?
It was significant struggles. I made less than $50,000 my first year. I made less than $50,000 my second year.
Wow.
I was sitting in a desk this big in the corner of someone else's office, learning, listening, not making much money. I didn't do a deal for the first 8 months. It was not easy. I was driving my grandfather's $900 gold 80s Lincoln that was overheating all the time. I had antifreeze in the trunk. You know, I mean, right. it was not... And this was coming from a very successful attorney making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Why'd you leave that? Just didn't like it or?
Yeah, I don't even say I didn't like it. I just wasn't fulfilled. I knew there was something out there that I was going to be more passionate about. I'd always loved real estate. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I figured, you know, I got to give it a shot. I could always go back into law. I could always make that easy money. Well, I wouldn't say it was easy money, but it was stable. You know, it was a successful, stable career at the very least. But no, I wasn't waking up excited to go in the office.
Okay.
It was not that type of fulfillment that I'm getting now.
Right. So when you were a lawyer, you were practicing what type of law?
Corporate litigation. So I actually was on the Enron trial. I represented Ken Lay and Jeff Skilling.
Wow.
The chairman and CEO. I spent 3 years on that trial. I did a large antitrust case, but I spent most of my career on the Enron trial.
All right. So you were a successful lawyer. That's a pretty big trial. And you made the leap, just one day said, you know what, I'm not fulfilled. I'm going to take a few steps back because I believe that if I get this right, it'll just be 20 or 50 steps forward and also a more fulfilling life. Is that the move, basically?
I never anticipated this type of success. So it wasn't like, am I going to take 20 steps forward? It was more that, can I be happier? I actually thought I was going to be probably going to make less money.
Right.
But I thought I could be happier. And the other thing too, is I have an identical twin brother who was also a successful attorney at Skadden Arps, another major law firm.
Yes, huge law firm. Yeah.
He quit and he started traveling the world and he would just send me photos. I remember there's a photo he sent me from like Panama. He's on the beach and there are like these little monkeys around and, you know, I'm in a cold office and he's on the beach. And I said, you know, he's very motivating for me. He always kind of pushes me to think a little bit outside the box, to feel more comfortable than I otherwise would, to be a little bit more confident in my decisions than I otherwise would. And he did that first. So seeing him quit the law and just travel made me... So when I quit the law, I didn't know what I was going to do. I actually sold everything I owned. I packed a 50-pound bag. I traveled the world for 3 years.
Really?
80 countries, a couple hundred cities, came back in, you know, serious debt.
When was this?
I quit law in 2000... I guess 06, 07.
Okay.
I started law in 03. I quit in like 07, 08. I traveled the world up until the middle of 2010, I think.
And so you did that before it could have been a business, traveling the world and social media and taping.
But, yeah.
Nowadays, you do that, you could turn that into a business.
Well, I don't even know if I was on, I don't even think I had maybe a face. I don't even know if I was on social media at the time. I didn't know anybody. Nobody would have watched me. It was just fun. I mean, I wanted to, I know I've always wanted to travel, and a lot of people wait until they're older to travel. I wanted to live with those experiences.
Great.
And I figured out when are you going to have 3 years of your life to travel?
What was the wildest place that you went to that just totally blew you away?
Well, there were places like, you know, Dubai that blew me away. But I would say that the experiences I remember were like the kind of off the beaten path. I remember one of the most awesome days I had was with my brother. We were walking around the pyramids in Egypt. Nobody around. I mean, we were like maybe, you know, half a mile from the pyramids. And these kids, these little 10, 12-year-old kids were playing soccer with like a duct taped soccer ball. No net in the goal on this hot sand. And we put our socks on and we just played for hours with these kids. That was probably the best day that I had traveling.
Wow. All right. So you come back from that and you say, all right, now I'm, how old were you, 30s at the point?
I came back at like, I was 32, I guess.
It says, time to get serious about my life. I got to make a move. Right?
It wasn't even that I was going to get serious. I was like, what am I going to do? I was in a lot of credit card debt. I didn't have a car. I didn't have clothes. I didn't have an apartment. I rented a small apartment with my buddy, like a one bedroom, you know, for like $1,600 a month. We split the rent.
In LA?
Yeah, in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I drove that car. I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought about going back into law, even though I knew I didn't want to do that. But, you know, it's an easy few $100,000 a year, even though I knew I wouldn't be super happy about it. But I just decided I got to give real estate a shot because I'm so passionate about real estate. I just absolutely love real estate. I would do real estate basically for free.
So how did it start? You just got a job as an agent?
Yeah, I had a friend that worked with this woman, Joyce Ray, who's like the queen of real estate in LA. And I joined her. I know I had the opportunity to join her team. And I basically just sat there and just, the first year was just learning. I would study street maps. I would just listen to people. And I got confident, not because I was making money or doing any deals, mm-hmm. but because I was listening to everyone who was successful in the office. And I'm like, I can do this. There's no reason why I can't do what everyone else in this office is doing. So it took about 3 years before I really got my feet wet and was making, you know, any kind of money. I was doing very small deals, but a lot of them, you know, really building a client base. And I always wanted to be on my own. I always wanted to own my own company, call my own shots. Coldwell Banker was great, but at the same time, it's very bureaucratic and there's all these levels and this hierarchy. And I just wanted to do my own thing. So as soon as I got the confidence and I had enough, you know, I was making enough money, I left, started the Oppenheim Group. But that, you know, the Oppenheim Group today is not the Oppenheim Group that it was, you know, whatever, 6 years ago. I mean, it was just me and an intern.
Right.
In my house, you know, this small house. It was in like a little, you know, corner office of my house. And, you know, but it grew quickly. And then I found this office space down the street here. I mean, literally it's like 30 seconds from this, your house. I wanted that office so bad, but it wasn't an office space. It was retail. So I don't know if you know the Montgomery family. They're down here on the corner. It says Montgomery Management. When you drive at the corner, it's it was in Scarface.
Yeah,
there was the bank in Scarface. So anyway, I would walk in there and bank.
Oh, really? That was...
Yeah.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Out of...
Sure, yeah.
It was called Montoya Management, and I walk
across exactly the... I know exactly. That always looked familiar to me. I did it now. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So you, when you watch Scarface they walk down, across the street.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Yeah,
the thing to the bank.
That's so funny. Wow.
So I go in there, and the guy, you know, he's in his 80s, and he's old school. I mean, I still walk over checks every month. I mean, that's how old school he is. And he's like, listen, I can't rent the space to you because it's retail. I've owned this for 100 years, and they built, you know, that little, it's like a one story, right? When you cross the street, it's like a next to Equinox on the right. He owns all of Sunset Plaza. That's why it all looks the same. It all looks like it's from the 1930s, even though it's newer. So he owns from like Mel's Diner all the way down to like Tokaya. I said, you know, please, I will pay you everything you're asking. You know, I would go in there. I would introduce him to like my girlfriend. I would introduce him to my brother. I brought my parents in there. We talked about like Hollywood history. Months and months go by. I'm just going in there like every few weeks, just saying, just please consider me. Finally, he said yes. I remember to this day, I was leaving here for Art Basel. I was just about to board the plane. He calls me. Anyway, I get the space. I build it out. And then I start calling my best friends. I'm like, do you guys want to work with me? You know, you want to get into real estate? And we did that. We created this great environment. Adam DeVillo called, you know, a few years later, said, do you want to do a show? At first, we did not want to do a show. In fact, we had been approached by a few people, and we're just like, I talked to my twin brother about it, and We're like, we can't. I mean, it's too much risk, not enough reward. Everything's going so well.
I get it. I've been the same thing myself, where you do it really well. You say, if it bombs or it sucks, it just like can really hurt your band.
Or my reputation. Yeah. But you know what? Now I love the show. I'm so glad I did it. But at the time, I was just a nervous wreck because, you know, you build my reputation is everything.
Sure.
And I didn't want to put that into somebody else's hands. But, you know, in retrospect, again, I mean, it's been amazing. It's been amazing for the women on my team. It's been amazing for me and my brother. It's been fun.
Let's go back a step here. There's one thing that you said that I found really interesting, and that was that it took you about at least a year until you were even comfortable enough to go out there and really engage actively in selling real estate. Is that what you said?
Yeah. So I was not. As a lawyer, you don't need to go procure business. Mm-hmm. So I was rather reserved. I'm very open and I'm out there now, and I'm very confident in selling myself and going into someone's living room and telling them why they should use me.
Sure.
And I believe what I'm saying, and it's easy for me right now.
Sure.
But it was not easy at the beginning. I was a little insecure. I had never had to procure business. I was actually a little bit embarrassed about going from being a lawyer to a real estate agent in a way. You know, if I met someone at a bar, I'd be like, I'm a lawyer and a real estate agent.
Sure.
Because, you know, anyone can be a real estate agent. So it was hard for me.
Let me put it this way. So if you met someone who was really sharp, good communicator, you know, had the sort of, you know, mental ability, they could pick up things quickly. Could you teach them the business much quicker than you learned it?
No.
Do you think it takes a year for someone to learn the business?
I think it takes years to learn the business.
Okay.
You can learn. I don't care. Like, for example, I think consider myself to be very intelligent and very hardworking.
Right.
I had a good acumen. But I was not a great real estate agent the first couple of years, not because I didn't have the potential, but because experience really matters in this industry. I learn something every day. So I don't care how smart you are. You really need a few years of experience because there's so much nuance. There's so many little things that go on.
Let me put it a different way. So is there two sides to it? Is there the actual technical side of being a real estate agent / broker, where you know everything about the properties and contracts and negotiations and what might make a house attractive, what would not make it attractive, what's the right buy, what's not the right buy? And then there's the sales side, where you actually can sit down and attract customers, be personable, build rapport. Was it the fact that you didn't feel you had the knowledge, or was it the sales and communication side that you felt was holding you back?
So, really good question, because I would actually say that real estate are those two pillars. I wasn't good at either. I didn't have the experience to have the confidence to know what I was doing. Even though I think I was smart, I just didn't know what I was doing. And on the other side, I wasn't comfortable in sales either. So I had a lot of insecurity about the first couple of years. I was even questioning, you know, my career choice the first couple of years. So again, I would say I wasn't good at either. And now I think I'm great at both.
The reason I ask that is because very often people are in the exact same position you were in, where they're doing okay, they're making decent money, but they don't feel fulfilled. And what stops them from making a change is that period of time, not where they go 3 years traveling. That was awesome, by the way. Great move. I think probably the best thing you did to really just do it while you're young, experience the stuff, not while you're old and being wheeled around, right? That's great.
Yeah.
But the idea that most people are fearful that they won't have enough income to meet their obligations, and it takes a long time to learn some industries. And, you know, I have a belief, tacit belief, that you can collapse time very often with great training and hard work and great mentorship. And I guess the question is there a difference between like being proficient enough to go out and start making enough money to pay your bills and provide for your family, and then being the true expert that you become over time with simply just doing a lot of deals, making mistakes and learning from them? How long would it take someone who really wanted to go into real estate but couldn't afford to wait a year to start making money? Is there a way to shorten that time frame to at least start making some money as you become an expert?
I don't think so. And it's a really good question. I don't think there is, unless you just know a ton of wealthy people that trust you already. And I would say that most of us weren't in that position. So I consider myself someone with a lot of ability. And I also think that I shrunk that time period that you're talking about by joining a team and experts. So I was around people who knew what they were doing, and I learned from osmosis. So I don't see there was a way to truncate that time period any more than I did. And yet it took me years. So I don't think that you can just go out there and start making money quickly.
Is that true for any type of real estate, or you're in the ultra high end of the market? Is it less demanding in the middle of the market or in the lower end, or same things apply all over?
I think you're probably right. I think that when you try to get into the luxury market, you're competing with people who just absolutely dominate that market. So 90% of the luxury market is dominated by the top 10% of the agents. So once you break in, it's much easier, but breaking in is more difficult. I agree. I don't have much experience in dealing with, you know, lower end properties, you know, or maybe like tract homes in Arizona or something. Maybe it's easier to break in there and just start getting a little bit of income. For me, I mean, people probably don't know this about me, but I don't need a lot of money to live. I mean, I'm not saying I don't enjoy, you know, my money, and I don't enjoy living a great life. I do. But I can also live in a one bedroom apartment, you know, with two roommates and drive, you know, a piece of crap car. So for me, taking risks is easy.
Got it. So if you were to say there were steps to becoming a successful agent, what is step one?
I would say it's joining a team where you've got a couple of big names on that team that are very successful. I think being around success generates success, and it builds confidence. So I wouldn't do it on your own. And part of that is people don't want to necessarily join a team. Well, one, maybe they can't, but let's say they can. They focus on the commission for the first couple of years. They're thinking, oh, I can go make 80%, you know, of my money if I don't join a team, and I only make 40% if I have to split it with my team leader and the brokerage. You can't focus on how much commission you're going to make in the first 3 years. You have to focus on the long term. And by the way, and a lot of people don't understand this, 80% of jack shit is jack shit, whereas 30 or 40%, which is what I was making, of some actual money, because you're getting opportunity, you're going to end up making more money that way. And you're going to build
learn
a foundation.
Learn and grow also, yeah. Right? So the idea is that by associating with a successful office, would it be? Because typically
a person.
Like this.
Really, I'm not so big on the name of the brokerage. Mm-hmm. I think you have to focus on joining a team with a successful agent with a great reputation.
Okay, and then learning from that agent and also leveraging off that agent's reputation to
exactly
get yourself business, right?
So I joined the Joyce Ray team. And again, she's like a queen of Los Angeles real estate. I leveraged, when I was out, I was saying, oh yeah, I work with Joyce Ray. I mean, nobody knew my name. I think I even handed out her business cards. I mean, I leveraged her, you know, very much. I brought her onto, you know, meetings with me. I absolutely leveraged her and took those opportunities to sit her listings, you know, to kind of establish myself.
Sure.
And I think, I don't know how I would have done it without joining a team. I mean, nobody would know who Jason Oppenheim was if it wasn't for Joyce Ray.
Got it. So,
and I should say Stacy Gatula. I mean, it was Stacy Gatula and Joyce Ray.
Do you think that real estate's industry is dominated by females, the retail side, or is it males, or is it 50-50?
I think in commercial, it's more male-dominated. In residential, I think it's pretty equal. I mean, I joined a largely female team, and the team leader was female. My close friend, Stacy, who brought me on, was female, so I learned from females. I think that, I would argue that there's probably more females that dominate. In the high end, you know, I'm trying to think about all the top realtors. It's male and female, but there's a lot of women in their mid 70s, late 70s that dominate around here.
So first step, find a great team and join the team. Don't try to do it on your own, or don't just join a big company because they have a good name. Make sure that the actual team, the team leader, the person that you're working with.
Forget about the brokerage. Focus on the person.
Got it. And what's step two?
Don't focus on commission. You know, you can't focus on your splits. You have to just focus on getting experience. So I spent a lot of time sitting other people's open houses, making no money, studying street maps, reading contracts, asking questions. I mean, all that matters your first couple of years is experience and knowledge. It doesn't matter if you make 50 grand or 100 grand. Who cares? What matters is what you're going to be making in year 5 and year 6. So again, I would just focus on learning and not focus on money.
Step three. Is there a transition point, like where you start to say, all right, I'm ready for the prime time here?
Well, step three for me was just, as I got busy, doing everything myself. So I'm a very detail-oriented person. I think that's, my clients could see that in me. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing, no deal too small. There was no issue too small, no detail too small. I mean, I was doing everything myself. I was reading the contracts, no mistakes. I mean, I just was very on point. I still consider myself someone that's on point. I was very reachable. I didn't say, oh, you know, it's too early in the morning, or it's too late at night, or this doesn't matter, I can delegate this, or I don't need to be there for inspections, or I don't need to ask this question. I mean, I think if you want to develop your own business, your clients have to love you. I mean, my clients are so loyal, they would never even consider working with somebody else because they know that I'm there for them. And I think you have to kind of create that rapport with your clients.
So was there a moment where you saw an opportunity and you made a break? See, I don't believe people just get breaks. Sometimes you make a break for yourself. You see something and you go the extra mile. And did you have a situation like that in those earlier years that put you on the road to where you are now? Can you point to one moment in time?
No, I can't. I think what I can point to is that it's very easy for me to take risks because I have a lot of confidence, but also I don't really care much about failure. Like, I'm totally cool with the ups and downs. And I didn't have like massive expectations when I left. I mean, I really, quite honestly, if someone had just told me, listen, you're going to make $100,000 a year, I probably would have been like, okay, cool. So I didn't have I don't have unrealistic expectations. But I think what it was for me is just, I really like working for myself. I mean, it's not that I don't enjoy working on a team. I do. When I was a lawyer, I worked with Dan Petrocelli, who was basically like the Joyce Ray of law. I mean, so I kind of learned like how important it is to learn from great people. So I was more than happy to do that. But at the same time, there's nothing more interesting to me than just doing my own thing, calling my own shots. I also enjoy design and marketing. So I like being able to, you know, put my name on the door. I like being able to design the office. I like being able to design my marketing. And I just have a lot of fun with that. So I wouldn't say there was a specific moment in time. I would just say that I kind of followed my entrepreneurial spirit.
Got it.
And I was, by the way, when I left, I was basically certain I was going to lose half my money. I was certain I was going to be less successful outside of Coldwell Banker at the Oppenheim Group than I was at Coldwell Banker. Now, it worked out differently, but I was very certain that I was going to have to take a step down in my finances.
So was there any clients, like for example, many years ago, I was in the mortgage industry, right? And I had one or two people that were just these incredible referral machines where they were just like feeding me just massive amounts of business all the time. And that really was if I had to look at one linchpin moment, it was going out. I did the work. I went out there into the field, knocking on doors, and I hit on the right door eventually and worked the relationship, you know, gave great service, but it was a couple of things. Do you have any, you know, massive referrers that just like sort of, you're like, wow, this is like the mother load, or no? Just
no.
You're one foot in front of the other.
Nothing. Yeah, it was one foot in front of the other. Now, I didn't leave and start my own company until I had already had a few deals under my belt. So I think I did 30 deals in 2013, maybe 14, right before I left. And it wasn't that any of them were that big. I mean, they were all like, you know, I mean, I don't want to dismiss a million-dollar deal, but they were leases, million-dollar, sure, you know, sure. million and a half.
Got it.
But I felt like I knew what I was doing. I felt like I could lose 50% of my business, which is actually what I anticipated, and still be fine and be able to do my own thing. But no, there was no, there was no security blanket.
You didn't have your cush?
Yeah, I didn't have like a big soft pillow.
From Jerry Maguire. Remember, like cush?
Oh, yeah.
Cush saves all the us, the big whale client.
I didn't have him.
Okay.
Yeah. So, although he never signed him, I don't think.
He didn't sign. No, I think he gets maybe.
Does he get him at the end? No, I think
the dad. It's a suggestion, yeah.
Right. He has this good receiver in that.
Exactly. Okay, so it sounds to me like you're just like, he's like just step by step by step. And it's just a lot of hard work, perseverance, great service, doing things yourself, very old fashioned, sort of just like, you know, doing the right thing, honest guy, good at what you do for sure. What is the difference though? You are, you know, the top agent last year in the country. There's gotta be something, and I don't believe it's just a show. I think it's gotta be more than that. There's something that you're doing that is probably duplicatable by others. That's why I'm trying to ask you, other people can learn from this and hopefully, you know, increase their own numbers, whether it's in real estate or any other industry, just by learning from you. So there's got to be something that you're doing here that separates you from other agents.
Well, I'll point to a couple of things. One is, I think I am very creative in creating deals. I mean, I won't get into too much nuance here, but I think you have to be able to think outside the box. Now, my legal you know, law school, my legal career really allowed me to think critically and to think creatively. So I don't know if you can just become a creative thinker, but I think that's extremely important. The other thing that I do
in terms of finance, you mean like that?
I mean, yes, finance, but more just how to keep a deal together. I'm a licensed contractor because I thought that was important. So I try to figure out, every deal has so many little things. I mean, someone wants to do this. Somebody wants to, you know, get seller financing. Somebody wants to, you know, can't buy this till they sell their other house. I mean, there's always a million things going on, and you just have to be able to move all the parts together and create the puzzle. I don't know if that's something you can teach, but it's important. But I think something you can teach that I do, I'm probably more honest and direct than just about any other agent. And I'm not suggesting other agents aren't honest, but other agents will tell their clients what they want to hear. I guess that's what I'm saying. My clients know that what I tell them is just, that's just flat out how it's going to be. I don't tell them what they want to hear. I tell them the truth. I tell them what their house is worth. You know, in conversations, I am just, this is actually not just in work. I'm just an extremely direct and brutally honest person in my social and my friendships with my family, with my clients. And I think people gravitate towards that, not because they always enjoy it. I mean, my clients certainly don't enjoy my honesty often, but at least they know that they can trust me.
Sure.
And I think that maybe more than anything, looking back, made it so that my clients were extremely loyal and would refer me business because they just knew that they were safe with me. And I also knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But they knew what they were going to get. They knew that if I told them something, I could deliver. They knew that if I told them not to, my clients call me for tax advice, legal advice, you know, you name it. I mean, I get calls about everything because at least they're getting a very direct, you know, no punches pulled, you know, response. And I think they feel comfortable referring me to their family and to their friends and repeat business because they know what they're getting with me.
Sure. Is your business strictly referral at this point?
No. I mean, I get the shows help me just get, you know, new clients. I get calls just, you know, all the time.
How about before the show?
It was mostly referral. Well, I also go out there and meet people, and I go out and sit open houses, and I try to meet clients. So that was maybe 20%, you know, new business. Then you get another maybe 50%, which is just repeat business. You know, in the Hollywood Hills, people buy and sell all the time. So that was great. And then probably 30% was referrals from existing clients.
Got it. How important is branding as a real estate agent?
I think it's tremendously important. So perfect example, I'm opening up a huge flagship office in Newport Beach in just a couple of weeks. I've been building it out the last 2 months. No other brokerage right now they're all taking away office space and closing down office space and trying to go online and all this stuff. My offices are billboards and they're fun. I have a huge bar and a pool table and a DJ, you know, stand. And I have clients over, I entertain, I try to make it fun. And I think that even though, you know, I think from a financial perspective, you know, I'm spending a lot of money, I think that in the long run, that branding is tremendously important. Having that rapport with clients, having agents that enjoy having fun, and it's like a family. I think all those intangibles are unbelievably important in real estate.
So for you, it's about, you know, the physical location. You make sure that it's in a visible location.
Yeah.
And you try to get people to come to the office. And when they come there, they get a sense of, what is it, like a fun...
it's like a living room.
Open
it's
bars, or like a butler there behind the bar serving drinks.
Oh, my new office is so I've got two gyms, and I've got like a little arcade room, and I've got a pool table with a huge living room, and probably a 15-foot bar with, you know, two kegs. We hire a bartender on Fridays for happy hour. We've got like a shuffleboard table, a pool table, a dining room. We have an outside barbecue. I mean, it's basically like a huge living room.
Right.
And then I have a few desks in the middle of the room. So I'm trying to just create a fun environment. There's no kid in business school that would ever say this business strategy makes sense, but it makes sense for me because I'm creating an environment. I'm having fun. I've got a lot of very successful agents that want to join because it's just fun. I take my team out to dinner. I'm going in about after this interview, I'm taking a Sprinter van, you know, with lounge chairs and a 50-inch TV. I mean, because why not? Like, this is part of the experience. I'm taking all my clients out to dinner. I mean, not all my clients, all my agents. We go to dinner, lunch every day. Now, this doesn't make business sense, but It does in the big picture, because everyone's happy, everyone's having fun, everyone supports everyone. And I think a lot of people want to work for a company like this. So for me, the branding and all that, like I'm buying a Harley Davidson and I'm branding it all Oppenheim Group. I'll never even ride it, but it's going to sit in the window and it's going to look cool. Now that doesn't make any business sense, but it does for me.
Right. So what's the most expensive house you've ever sold in this area?
$36 million, just up the street.
Which, and what kind of house is that?
Huge, gorgeous, contemporary. Yeah. Now I've got another $35 million in Orange County I'll be putting on the market, in Corona Del Mar. And I'm trying to think, there are, well, we might be writing an offer on a $50 million deal. It's actually my client, Mary Fitzgerald. It was my agent's client. So we're stepping up. But I think, you know, 30 to 50, we almost did a $60 million deal, but we lost it not long ago. So I think we're going to be increasing those numbers. But I will take $5 million deals over a $25 million deal all day long.
Why is that?
Well, because it helps me.
Closings, more.
I enjoy meeting clients and doing deals. So just on a pure business perspective, it's better for my business. I'm developing my business base more when I do more deals. Mm-hmm. I'm interacting with more agents. I'm interacting with more clients, and I've got my five, you know, signs on those houses. You know, I can send emails out about those sales. Whereas one $20 million deal, usually, you know, if you go $20 million and up, you have to take a slightly lower commission. Sometimes you're listing it with another agent. Those can sit on the market forever. Don't get me wrong, I love $20, $40, $50 million deals, but I would take my bread and butter deals all day long.
How fierce is the competition among the other sort of celebrity agents, brokers in this area?
I wouldn't even call it competition. I mean, they're all, actually, I just got into a $12 million deal with James Harris today, who's on Million Dollar Listing. I just texted Josh Altman yesterday, happy birthday. I mean, we are all friends. I just lost out on a listing to Frederick Eklund, who's a great agent on Million Dollar Listing. And I told him if he can sell that house for the price that he took that listing for, that I'm going to run down to Crescent Heights in whatever shorts he wants me to wear, just shorts. So I think we're all good friends. I don't call it competition. I mean, you win some, you lose some.
Right.
There are a ton of homes out here. I think more importantly, it's great to be to have a relationship with those people, because you're going to be doing business with them for the next, you know, 20, 30 years of your life.
The Oppenheim Group is getting more listings. Homes are bigger, the land is bigger, and the commission is bigger.
I just closed on a $44 million house.
So how'd the whole Netflix thing come to be? What was the moment in time where they approached you, you approached them? How did it happen?
So that also wasn't just a particular moment in time. My brother and I had been approached probably for a year and a half by many different agents, producers wanting to do a show. We were adamant against it. We took a couple meetings, but we're just like, listen, we're not. Even when Adam Davila first called, we said, you know, we're not interested. You know, he called back. He kind of just said, can I just go to your office? Can I just meet you guys? And we're like, okay, you know, we'll take another meeting. After the meeting, we started to turn around. You know, we went from maybe 20% yes, 80% no to like 50-50. We talked about trying to get a show on Netflix. That's where we wanted to be. You know, we did a little sizzle reel. And then at that point, once I get behind something, then I go, you know, 100%. So when we did the sizzle reel, then we started to think, okay, now we have to get it. Now that we're actually going to put some time and energy into this, now we have to get the show. Netflix got interested, picked up a pilot. We did the pilot, and then, you know, the rest is history.
So with Netflix, you don't make money. You make it up front, right? You don't make money on residuals.
No, correct.
Right?
Yeah, they pay you episodically, and you don't make money on residuals.
Right. So how's that going so far? You're really happy with the deal with Netflix?
I love Netflix. I love the people at Netflix, and I don't think that there's a better, you know, streaming service out there. I mean, I don't know if
I agree, by the way. I like Netflix a lot. I mean,
they're in every country too. I mean, I don't think there's any other, well, I guess technically the streaming services are, but compared to maybe other networks that aren't streaming, they're not, I don't think they're as global. But, and I don't
very,
know if
they're very good at like picking up weird content from all over the place and just consolidating it. That's what I like. You never know what you're going to find.
Well, they're very outside the box.
Right.
I mean, and now we've kind of created a genre. Now they've got Bling Empire. They've got another show about some women in Miami, like a kind of a Selling Sunset type real estate show. million-dollar beach house. I mean, they're kind of creating a genre out of this.
We're How many seasons are there for Selling Sunset?
Three out, and we just got picked up for season... We're just filming season 4 and 5 right now.
And has the audience been growing every single year? Do they tell you those things?
Well, they're pretty... closed about that, but we go on Google Trends,
right.
And you can kind of figure out what's going on through Google Trends.
Right.
So yes, it's been
by searches, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So indirect evidence.
Yeah,
that
Google Trends
people...
pretty much tells you how you're doing on Netflix. I mean, that's a kind of a very fun indicator that you can play around with. And you can compare yourself to other shows. So yeah, I think we know how we're doing based on that.
Got it. So what are your plans for the future here? Do you want to open up, you know, obviously this, you said just open up in Newport?
Yeah.
Right?
So that's the next step. I mean, I spent years kind of waiting to figure out where and when I want to open up a second office. So that's going to hold me over for a little while. But then I think, you know, there's a potential for places like Miami and New York or Las Vegas, I would think in that order. But I'm just going to go very slow. It's more about the people and kind of like I've got my best friend from high school managing the Newport Beach office, who I've known for 25 years. So there's that trust and that relationship. I've got my executive assistant moving down there to run that office. So I need to have the right people. I'm not just going to go license my brand. I mean,
sure.
My brand is who I am. It's my name. It's my reputation. So I want to go very slow. I don't need... it's also a lot of fun. If I'm getting stressed out, I don't need the extra, you know, whatever I'm going to make at these new offices. I want to enjoy what I'm doing. I want to have the right people.
What do you think of all the people that are out there teaching courses and flipping and lots of stuff out there being sold online? Is it mostly just nonsense and it doesn't work? Or is there money to be made in taking a course and learn how to flip houses and make fortune in real estate? Or is it just nonsense?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about that because I'm really, the luxury game is really my market. Tariq El Moussa, who's marrying Heather Young, who's a cast member and a friend, he knows a lot about that flipping. He does a lot of those classes. And I think he knows what he's... I mean, that guy makes a lot of money flipping, you know, $500,000 homes, doing the remodels. I don't know anything about it, so I'm not going to go pretend to go out on the internet and start teaching people something I don't know. If people want to learn about luxury real estate, you know, I'll probably talk about that, but...
But there is a legitimate business out there that you know of where people are making money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know a ton of it, but I know that Tariq is doing very well, you know, in that marketplace. He has a show, Flip or Flop, and Flipping 101. So there are people that are doing it. I mean, I think I'm a big believer in making money in real estate. I mean, I've made my money in real estate, and I mean in terms of buying and renting and all that. So I think that the way you make money in this country is through leverage. And the only way you can leverage is in real estate. No one's going to loan you 80% to go buy stock. No one's going to loan you 80% to go buy Bitcoin. I mean, but you can go get it, you know, 80% loan to value on real estate at a
fixed... Well, you can, but, you know, there's a significant risk with, leverage and options and stuff like that. You can borrow on it.
But you can't go get a 30-year fixed rate at 2.8%
right.
to go
so
buy
stock.
Right,
the cost of the money is much higher.
Yeah, so for me, because real estate... I'm not saying that real estate's going to outperform Bitcoin or outperform art or outperform vintage baseball cards or outperform the stock market. But you can go leverage yourself in real estate. So for me, that's why I do it. Oh, and by the way, you can rent real estate and get income. You can't rent Bitcoin or rent, a baseball card.
What do you think about the pandemic and the impact it's had on real estate? Where do you think it's going in terms of the pandemic seems to be winding down right now. We're at the tail end, right? Do you think there's going to be certain pockets that never come back or that continue to rise? What do you think happens? Any major paradigm shifts?
Yeah, so I get that question a lot. And by the way, you've asked really good questions. I don't think there's going to be a paradigm shift. I really don't. I think we're going to have some kind of very quick, synaptic responses to this type of thing. We're seeing people move to Malibu and Montecito and go to the Valley. There's a focus on land. I hope that stays. I think that land is what you want to focus on always, pandemic or no pandemic. So I'm glad that it's kind of, it's made people focus on land, but I do not see any paradigm shifts. There are people moving to Texas and Miami for tax reasons and maybe for, to go get some land. I have a feeling that in a couple of years, people will be moving back. I don't think that Malibu is going to be or Montecito are going to be places where, people end up.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are going to move back to the city and then they may have a second home or third home somewhere. But I think it's going to be business as usual. I have not seen much of an effect other than, like I said, a quick response to like maybe moving a little bit out of the big city. And, you know, I think crime's picked up here. I think that people are a little bit deterred right now, but that the $2 to $3 million price, this is what's driving real estate interest rates. It's not the pandemic. The real estate market is going to boom over the next 2 or 3 years. And I'm not saying that because I'm a real estate agent. I'm saying that because the luxury market. Well, actually everything. There's just a lot of money out there. People are already coming out of this pandemic with more money than they've ever had. Not everyone, but there are a lot of wealthy people that are even wealthier right now. Stock market's at an all-time high and interest rates are at an all-time low. So I'm pretty optimistic that everything's just going to be business as usual. The first couple months of this year have been the busiest that I've had. Most of the top agents that I know are having their best first 3 months of the year.
So you think that there's not going to be any major long-term changes? How about for commercial real estate?
Yes, I think commercial real estate is going to have a hard time. But no big changes for residential. In commercial, I just think that the pandemic may have exacerbated what was already going on. You can work from home. You do have Zoom. I'm a big believer in going to the office, so I don't like this change. But the bottom line is, it's not even just, you know, when I think of commercial, I think of office space, which I don't think is obviously going to have a few good years in front of it. But also retail. I mean, you're buying everything online now. So I don't think the pandemic, yes, the pandemic, again, added, you know,
accelerated maybe,
it. Man. But honestly, I mean, how many people are going to buy, you know, going to a supply store to buy supplies or going online? I think I bought something today. I can't even remember what I bought, but I bought a couple step stools for, you know, one of my tenants. And
right.
Whatever I buy, I can get it the next day. Right. Why am I going to, you know, go to the store? I mean, even food. I was at a friend's house last night. She gets food delivered. She has a little mini oven that it comes with. She scans the barcode. The oven scans the barcode. It knows how to cook it. And you put the food in the oven. Right. I mean, you know, I just don't think commercial real estate is going to have a great few years. And I think that also we may, I don't know what Biden's planning to do, but I don't think the 1031 exchange and the tax advantages of commercial real estate they're in jeopardy to some extent right now.
So you think that if you're in commercial real estate, get out or switch to residential or just hold on tight or try to find a niche? What do you think? Say you hold commercial real estate, do you think there's going to be downward pressure on prices? I guess that's the better question.
Yeah, I do. I don't understand why people buy commercial real estate to go get a 4% cap rate and deal with tenants. And by the way, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with, you know, well, that's too nuanced, but I'm not optimistic about commercial real estate or even retail space or multifamily. I think California there's the tenants' rights in California. You can see what's going on now with tenants not paying their rent. Now, granted, there are some people who truly can't afford their rent, but there are probably also some people taking advantage of the situation.
Right.
I don't want to own rental, you know, multifamily. I wouldn't want to own commercial. I wouldn't want to own retail.
How much of a disaster is that? This whole issue with the multifamily and people not paying rent.
Well, we don't know yet. I don't think it's a disaster. But I'm generally an optimist. I think everyone will pull through, but I don't think we know yet until we see all the vacancies that occur when we can actually evict people. Well, I don't say we. I don't really own any of that type of property. But yeah, I mean, we'll see in 6 months if there's a lot of vacancy and what that does to rental rates. And we'll see how many people are forced into foreclosure and there's going to be lawsuits. It's going to be a tough year, I think, in commercial and retail.
There are two schools of thought out there in the world of coaching and creation of wealth and success. One school of thought says, don't buy your home. Rent. You're better off renting a home because you want to put your money to work in other places. There's a lot of people that think that. And then there's another, I think a larger school of thought that says, no, you want to own your home. It's the best investment you'll ever make. What do you think?
And I've had people who tell me renting is stupid. You're just throwing away your money. But I don't think that's true because I think giving your money to your landlord is no different than giving your money to a bank to pay interest. So I do hope that people understand at least that either way, you're essentially renting your house from a bank or you're renting your house from a landlord. I don't think renting is stupid. However, I do think that if you can afford to buy a house and you can get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage on it at a low interest rate, I think you have to do that. I mean, I tell I buy homes as many times as many as I can. I tell my agents to buy a property. I think right now, I think it's very interest rate dependent, but if you can get a 30-year fixed interest rate and you can go live in that house And then if you ever want to move, you rent it out and you make, you know, a few hundred bucks a month. So yes, I think that you're going to get well. I tell all my agents, if you want to retire in 20 years and you want to be very wealthy in 20 years, buy a house, buy the biggest, most expensive house you can right now, get the best 30-year fixed interest rate you can, put down as little money as possible, and you hold that house for 20 to 30 years, and I guarantee you, you're going to be wealthy in 30 years. I don't know what the hell that market's going to do over the next, you know, here and there, but it will be a lot higher in 20 to 30 years than it is now. So in that sense, I would buy.
Fixed rate mortgage the best.
Fixed rate mortgage the best, yeah. I mean, it's honestly, I don't want to be cliche, but it's just, it's obnoxiously cheap to go buy a house.
What are the rates right now for a large fixed?
I just bought a house for, I don't know, but I mean, I just bought
a few $1 million.
Yeah, a few million dollars. I got a few multi-million dollar loan. I'm paying 2.75% interest on a 30-year mortgage.
So let's say you buy a house for, let's say, $10 million, right? And you put down, what do you have to put down these days? What's the...
Well, let's do a $5 million deal.
$5 million.
Because $10 gets a little bit weird.
Sure.
But you buy a house for $5 million. I just bought a house for $5 million. I put down 20%.
Okay, $1 million
down. Yeah, $1 million. I got a loan for $4 million at 2.75%.
What's the payment on that?
30-year fixed. All in, so my total cost of owning the property is $16,000 a month. That includes, you know, property taxes, interest. Now, I don't include principal because that's a forced savings account. I lived in the house for a little while. I decided to lease it out. I leased it out for $35,000 a month. So I'm already making $19,000 a month. And that's going to happen forever. So I'm already getting probably on my cash, I'm getting like a 12% return on my $1 million.
Man.
And that house is going to appreciate over the next 20 years. So I'm getting 12% plus, call it 5% appreciation. I don't think you're getting 17%, you know, year over year over year on any other type of investment.
And why is it that you say it gets wonky about at $10 million? What's that?
Well, you're not, when you get over $10 million, first of all, most people are paying in cash. You know, and it, the reason the market is doing so well in the $2 to $3 million price point is because it's very interest rate dependent.
Sure.
90%, you know, that's your first home. 90% of people are getting interest rates. And the $10 million, 10, 20, it's usually all cash, or what they're doing is they own stock and they're borrowing that money against their stock at a 1.5% interest rate, like a, you know, some type of equity line. So you're rarely seeing them go to a bank and get money. But if they do, you usually have to put down a much lot. Banks aren't loaning you $8 million on a $10 million purchase.
Got it. Sounds good. Any parting words for people? Where do they find you online? Is there an online presence you have that...
Yeah, I mean, I had to take my cell phone off because it gets a little nuts. But, you know, my email, jason@ogroup, ogroup.com, Instagram.
Ogroup.com.
Yeah.
And when does the next season come out?
Well, we're just filming, so it's going to be a few months before we wrap.
All right, everyone. Yeah. Jason, you're a man. Oppenheimer?
Yeah.
What kind of name is that? That's
German.
German, right?
Yeah, it's a city in Germany, actually.
Love it. All right.
You were so good, by the way, man. My pleasure.
Thank you. Everyone, you got to listen to this and share it with your friends. Because everyone, I believe everyone should have at least some exposure to real estate, whether you rent it out, live there, whatever it might be. I think it's a great investment. And if you want to buy a beautiful home, he's your man in LA. Take care.